speak about my work. So this is some work which I've been doing for the past 2 or 3 years, which is trying to find the applications of Ricci flow program in maths to string theory. So these are the papers, and let me just start describing this program. So what geometric flows will actually appear in this talk are flows which are like renormalization group flows which come from string theory. So if you take closed bosonic string theory, you take the string and you make it propagate inside a target space, then its low energy dynamics is described by a quantum field theory which lives entirely on the world sheet. And that's the world sheet sigma model, which has an action which looks like that. So there's this dot, 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 which indicates that there could be other fields. For example, there could be the dilaton, or the B field, or a bound tachyon, even the world sheet action. So let's just recall that the embedding coordinates of this sheet in the target space, which are those x's, are like the scalar fields in this 2D action, in this 2D quantum field theory. And the metric of the target space is like a coupling constant in this 2D quantum field theory, if you expand it out. So the M could be non-compact, although I've drawn it like that here. And if you start with some generic metric on this target space, then obviously the sigma model is not a conformal field theory. So now if you do a renormalization group transformation of this 2D quantum field theory, the coupling constants will actually flow. So the coupling constant here is like the metric of the target space. So what you're going to get is a flow equation for the metric. And the flow equation actually has this form. Now t which I have here is not a time. It's actually minus of the log of the RT scale. But I'm going to keep calling it time because as far as this equation is concerned, this is a parabolic PDE and it's like the time for that. So I might just keep saying time by habit, but it's not really the time. It's the log of the RT scale. So what you have on the right-hand side is minus of this alpha prime, which is the square of the string length, times Rij, the Ricci tensor, plus some other terms in general. Now, what are the two possible terms that you can have? Well, one class of terms could be higher order in alpha prime. And these are higher order corrections to the beta functions, which can be neglected if the Ricci scalar is much less than 1 over alpha. And the other class of terms that you could have out there are terms involving other fields. It could be the B field or the dilaton or a bound tachyon. So all these class of flows I'm going to call geometric flows, and these are the flows that I'm going to consider in the rest of the talk. So to be more precise, a geometric flow is a PDE of that form, along with a stipulation that we really want to flow through geometries, okay, so of metrics, multiphasic. Now, the interest in these kinds of flows has been mainly in the fixed points, because when you have the fixed points of these flow equations, then the sigma model is a CFT, and that's what for a long time people were interested in. But now, recently, there's been a lot of interest in solutions to the whole RG flow, okay, not just the fixed points. And the motivation is that somehow they might approximate off-shell or on-shell time string dynamics in various situations. So for example, you can have tachyon condensation. And there is a belief that such processes might be approximated in some regime by the solutions to the RG flow. So there are old ideas which go back to Banks and Wafa, and now there's been a lot of interest in this because people have computed explicit solutions to these RG flows, which seem to do exactly what flow string tachyon condensation is supposed to do. So my motivation is basically this. So I'm going to be motivated by this interest and study geometric RG flows in their fixed points. So as we said, as we talked about yesterday, one of these geometric flows has been studied independently in math, and that's the flow with just the Ricci tensor on the right-hand side. and this was introduced to address Thurston's conjecture. So some of the recent developments in this program of math have been that the Ricci flow is being used to resolve part of Thurston's conjecture, at least. And this has been made possible by two important results. One is that the Ricci flow is monotonic on compact target spaces. And the second thing is that there's a better understanding of the singular behavior under that flow. So these are the two important questions, and I'm basically going to be focusing on the first result for the rest of my talk, but my hope is that somehow this better understanding of singular behavior will lead to some applications in string theory. So the main question is, can these techniques or results be used to understand string theory RG flow better?
So probably you're going to tell us, but how is the result of Perelman particular to three dimensions?
Actually, not the monotonicity result. The thing is that even singular behavior, the result which he has, which says that volumes do not collapse faster than volume of balls in flat space, even that result is in any dimension. But then if you try to focus and you try to ask what is the geometry near a neck and so on, that becomes three dimensional. So a lot of his work is in any n dimensions. So that's the advantage. That's what we're going to do. Okay, so let's focus on one of his achievements. The statement is there are no periodic solutions to Ricci flow on compact manifolds, except ones that could change throughout by just a few marks. So there are no periodic solutions in geometry. Now, when we realize that Ricci flow is actually a first-order renormalization group flow, this statement should sound very familiar. Because if we recall what an RG flow is, what an RG scale transformation does is that it makes a coarse graining of the description of a physical system. So intuitively, what you expect from an RG flow is that it ought to be irreversible. That's not true. Actually, there are exceptions known. And you also would normally expect that it flows to nice, simple fixed points, and that is also not true in general. So these are intuitions, but we know of counterexamples to these. And so therefore, no general proof of these intuitions exists for any quantum field theory RG flow. Suppose you ask, is any quantum field theory RG flow irreversible? There's no general proof. There are counterexamples, except when you take 2D renormalizable quantum field theories. When you have two-dimensional quantum field theories, then there's a theorem known as Zamolod Chekhov C theorem, which tries to prove the first thing. So what is the C theorem? What the C theorem does is it says, let's consider RG flow through two-dimensional, rotationally invariant, renormalizable QFTs. And now we are going to define a function on the space of all these 2D QFTs. What that function is going to be is it's going to be composed out of the expectation values of correlators of the energy momentum tensor. So I can, when I'm in 2D, I can always use these kind of complex coordinates. And then I take these expectation values, TZZ, TZZ, and TZZ bar, TZZ, and so on. And I compose this particular combination of these expectation values, and I get the C function. Now, the interesting thing about it is that if I do a scale transformation of the C function, okay, I get the following equation. H is the same thing that I have above. And the interesting thing is that in a unitary field theory, H is always non-negative. So what happens is that under this RG scale transformation, which is this equation, C changes monotonically under that transformation. There's one more interesting thing, which is that if that 2D quantum field theory is a conformal field theory, then we know for a conformal field theory that TZZ bar is zero, because the trace is zero. So because this is zero, we can go back to these formulae here, and we conclude that H is zero, so the C function is actually a constant. And that constant, if you look at what the C function is composed of, you can figure out it's just the central charge of the CFT. So CFTs are fixed points of the flow of the C function. And the constant that the C function is just the central charge. There's an important question that you can ask here. Is the converse true? Is every solution to dc by dt equal to zero CFT? Okay. Why is this important? Why is it important to know the converse? Because if the answer to the converse is yes, then we know that CFTs are fixed points of RT flow. So we say that when we are at a fixed point of an RT flow implies and is implied by the fact that the C function is a constant. So RT flow fixed points and C function being constant would be the same thing. And so what picture would then emerge is that C function is constant on RT flow fixed points. It's monotonically, it's strictly decreasing on all other points. So it really behaves like an entropy, and then you can conclude from there that 2D RG flow is then irreversible. So you need both the statement and its converse. But the problem is that the converse may not always be true. You may have a non-trivial RG flow, but you might always have that VC by VT is zero. So the C function would then be insensitive to the flow and would tell us nothing about the irreversibility of the flow. What is an example of this? An example of this is the well-shaped sigma model on generic non-compact target spaces. Why does this happen? Well, this happens because for the sigma model, remember that the embedding coordinates of the sheet in the target space are themselves the fields of that 2D QFT. So the C function is actually made up of expectation values of correlators which look like that. So what do these expectation values look like for a well-shaped sigma model? You can write down an expression for those expectation values. And if you look at the numerator and the denominator, well, you might see immediately that the denominator would be proportional to the volume of M. Okay? Especially if M is non-compact, then that volume is going to infinity, and the denominator will also have a zero mode, which goes to infinity. But the numerator may be finite. So if that happens, if the numerator is finite, and since you're in the non-compact space, the denominator is infinite, then the correlators all go to zero. The expectation values all go to zero. So then the C function would be zero, even though the sigma model may not be a CFT. So when does this happen? This is a result due to Seidlin. Seidlin computed the C function for the non-linear sigma model. And for example, if you set the dilaton and the B field to be zero, then the numerator is finite if the integral of R over the integral of the Ricci scalar over the compact space over the target space is finite. So the target space is non-compact, but the integral of R dV over that target space would be finite. And therefore, what you could have is that the numerator is finite and the denominator is infinite, and all these expectation values are going to zero. So if you have RT flow through spaces where this happens, then the C theorem breaks down because the C function is exactly zero, even though you're having a non-trivial RT. So I just want to mention here, although this is not going to be important for my talk, that the previous problem happened because your target space was non-compact. The volume of the space was infinite. When the target space is compact, the situation is not better, although for a different reason. Again, the C function for the sigma model, which is computed by Seidlin, is a very strange expression. Because if you want to compute C, you require knowledge of the full flow from minus T going from minus infinity to plus infinity. And that's a problem. Because generically, if you take a geometric flow, then geometric flows lead to singular behavior, shrinking of some portions of M somewhere between T equal to minus infinity and T equal to plus infinity. So whenever you have shrinking, the scalar curvature is going to be very large. And at some point when it shrinks, it's going to be of order 1 over alpha prime. So at that point, all the stringy corrections in the beta function become equally important. So even if you want to compute this C function for a range of T where the curvatures are small, you actually need information about the full RT flow in order to compute it. So that's a problem in the target space is compact. So the use of the C theorem for string theory RG flow seems unclear. But however, if we believe that string RG flow approximates string dynamics in some regime, then we need to know if it exhibits such pathological behavior, like, for example, reversibility, periodic solutions. Because the processes which it's supposed to describe in the string dynamics, which is, it is supposed to describe in some regime like closed string tachyon condensation, are all supposed to be reversible. So we need to understand if this flow is reversible or not. So there were some suggestions to prove, to answer this question on non-compact target spaces. Now, one of the suggestions was by this group of authors. And what they did was to look at a particular RG flow solution, which is supposed to approximate flow string tachyon condensation. And this particular flow solution is in 2D target spaces. What you have is you have a non-compact space. You basically have an orbit fold C by Zn. And that flows under the RG flow to flat space. So as it flows, you see you have a defect angle here. And as it flows, the tip is getting smooth, and then it just goes to flat space. So for this particular flow, they guessed that maybe the energy of the target space changes monotonically and acts as an entropy for this RG flow, thereby proving that RG flow is irreversible. But it's easy to see from this figure that the energy is not a good example, because when you have this defect, the area mass is proportional to the defect here. And then when the tip gets smoothed, still asymptotically you have that defect, so the area mass is the same, and it's the same here, and it changes non-uniformly to zero when you go to flat space. So the mass does not change along the flow, it changes non-uniformly at the final point. So then their suggestion was, they looked at this fact, and then their suggestion was, well, you could put space in a box. So you could look at the area mass at the boundary of this box rather than at infinity. And then you could use heuristic arguments to argue that it changes monotonically. Now that's a problem, because you're doing a flow through geometries, and whatever prescription you have should be diffeomorphism invariant. So this prescription doesn't prove irreversibility, because you can just change coordinates. If you change coordinates, you don't know what the diffeomorphism is doing to the boundary of the box. You don't know if it's going to spoil the monotonicity argument, if it's coordinate dependent. And also, suppose you take an RG flow solution which only changes by diffeomorphisms, then you might get a spurious mass increase if you put it in a box. So this is not very satisfactory, and one has to do better than that. So what I'm going to do now is tell you a bit about ourselves. Okay, so a preview of what we find is that it's indeed possible to construct these diffeomorphism invariant entropies for RG flows. And the interesting thing is some of these entropies actually equal the central charge at the fixed points of the flow. So this is the closest analog to the C theorem that you can get. And in fact, the entropies can be used to develop a target space language for describing the perturbations of fixed points. So when we usually study perturbations of fixed points, we study them as relevant or irrelevant perturbations of the CFT. But you can also describe the same thing in a target space language using these entropies. And lastly, you can also use some standard geometric techniques to tell us when non-trivial fixed points to these flows exist. So I'm going to describe all these results in some detail. So the first result is that when you take worldsheet RG flow through a wide class of asymptotically flat target spaces, it's irreversible. So how do we show that? We show that by a combination of entropies. Turns out that we have to split the flow into two cases. The first case is when all along the flow, the Ricci scalar is greater than or equal to zero everywhere on the target space. And the other case will be when it's not, so we're going to consider both. And we need to make an important assumption without which we cannot do, and that is that the integral of the Ricci scalar should be finite along the flow. Okay, then how do you get such an integral? You basically start with this equation, which is the Ricci flow, or the first order RG flow. And then, from there, you can get a flow for the volume element. So what you do is you simply integrate this, a flow for the volume element, in some interval of time from t0 to t. So you get that kind of equation. And now you define something which is like the integral of what you have there, which is this difference of volume elements. Define the integral of that to be some function mu. And then you note from the previous line that that mu is just equal to this expression. So notice that on the left-hand side, the mu which I have is the difference of two volume elements and integrated over a non-compact space. Now each of those pieces, integral over n of square root of t, is actually infinite because you're on a non-compact space and that's just the volume. But if you take the difference of those two, the difference of those two becomes finite. So this mu is like a regularized volume. Why is it finite? Because the difference of those two is just this integral, but I know that integral of r is finite by assumption. So mu is actually finite, and it's like a regularized volume. And also, if I differentiate mu, I can see that because I assume that r is greater than or equal to 0, d mu by dt is greater than or equal to 0. So what I find is that for flows where r is greater than or equal to 0, this regularized volume is non-decreasing in that time interval, and it behaves like an entropy. Now, there's a small argument here which I'm not going to go through now. I'll go through it later if somebody's interested. But that small argument implies that actually this mu equal to 0 implies Ricci-Flatt metrics. So mu equal to 0 implies that you're at a fixed point of the Ricci flow, and if you're not, if mu is non-zero, then mu is always increasing monotonically. So it's constant at fixed points. When you're away from a fixed point, it's increasing. So it's like an entropy. And it can be used to rule out periodic solutions in geometry.
So, is this entropy function related, or did you try to use the entropy function that Bergmann introduced for the
The Perelman's entropy is like the lowest eigenvalue of the operator minus Laplacian plus Ricci scale, if you might recall from yesterday. And the problem with using that in this case is that so suppose you take this Schrodinger operator minus Laplacian plus R. Now R is like a potential term, right? So if r is positive, or is greater than or equal to 0, then the potential is like a barrier, not like a well. So you will not have a discrete spectrum on a non-compact space. So you cannot use that here, but if r is less than 0, you can use it and really. Okay. So this particular entropy can be used to rule out periodic solutions in geometry. What do those periodic solutions look like? The metric at some time may be related to the metric at an earlier time by diffeomorphs. So we can rule out periodic solutions only if the diffeomorphism falls off asymptotically in a particular way. I'm not giving the details here, but that's the only thing you can do. That's because in this integral there are some boundary terms. So the diffeomorphism has to fall off in this particular way, and the important thing is that you can't do better than that, because there does exist a solution which is the 2D Witten black hole, which is not Ricci flat, but its metric only changes by diffeomorphisms for all t, and its diffeomorphism exactly violates this condition. So this is the best that you can do, and if you break that condition, then you know of solutions which change by diffeomorphism.
So does this mean that the Witten black hole is not asymptotically flat?
The Witten black hole is, okay, asymptotic flatness, Witten black hole looks like a cylinder. When you go far out, it doesn't look like the usual flat space. So it's like a cigar. But I can impose some fall-off conditions on G, okay? But then I'm still going to violate that condition on phi.
Okay, so I'm just trying to understand the sequence of things. So if you have the target space manifolds which are asymptotically flat of a specific sense.
Yeah.
We've given follow-up conditions on
right. Page. Yeah.
Then this follows.
Yeah.
Those asymptotic conditions do not hold with the rule.
Actually, I'm not sure about that because it's a 2D solution. I think the follow-up conditions are required in order to prove that some of these, some of these results on the entropies. But I think that for the written black hole, you can still do everything except for the fact that that particular follow-up of the diffeomorphism, you cannot arrange. So the written black hole changes only by diffeomorphisms, and that diffeomorphism violates this condition.
So asymptotic flatness is connected to what diffeomorphisms can do at infinity because it also prescribes follow-up flaps.
That's true. Actually, I'm lying because I only need asymptotic flatness for the second case. So I don't need it for the case r greater than or equal to 0, but I definitely need it for the second case, which is r less than 0 somewhere. Since I combine both into a result, I've written that it's only true for asymptotically flat spaces. But in this case, I only needed that integral of r is finite. And that's obeyed by the written black hole. But then there's a second condition, which is that the diffeomorphism should fall off in a particular way. That's not obeyed. Okay. So, yeah, that's a good. Right, so because of this, so this is the best you can do. So modulo this condition that the integral of r is finite, and modulo this fall off on the diffeomorphism, you can prove that in this case, there is no, we do not figure out this condition. Now, the second case, which is that r is less than 0 somewhere on the target space, sometime along the flow, now you can produce an entropy which is like Perelman's entropy, which is the lowest eigenvalue of this operator. And because r is negative somewhere, you can produce a potential well such that you now have a discrete spectrum with a lowest eigenvalue. And that's why you can't have it for the case r greater than or equal to 0. And to prove that this is an entropy, you need a non-trivial generalization of Perelman's proof, and that's where the fall-offs come, and you require asymptotic flats. So the important thing here is that it's hard to just generalize Perelman's results, because you might prescribe some fall-offs at some time, but then you have to control those fall-offs all the, for all times when you're flowing along the PDEs. So that's the hard part. But again, the entropy rules out periodic solutions. Unless you're on a flat or fixed point. So it seems that world sheet RG flow on asymptotically flat target spaces, modulo those few conditions, is irreversible. Now the next question is, well, you might define all these entropies, but you really want to know if any of these entropies has a physical meaning in the world sheet theory. So we could not do anything with the entropies which we defined for these asymptotically flat spaces because we didn't know what to compare it to in the world sheet theory. The only natural thing is like a central charge, for example, when you're at a fixed point, but then on asymptotically flat spaces, all those are zero. So we didn't know what to compare it to. So the next step which we did was we actually looked at a flow on compact target spaces so that we have something to compare it to in the world sheet theory. And this was the RG flow with a B field, okay, and you have this complicated set of coupled equations. And again, under this flow, you can get something which is an entropy like Perelman. It's this one is a generalization of Perelman's proof. And now you're going to have an operator which looks like that, depends on the H as well. Of course, it proves you can prove irreversibility of this flow, but more importantly, you can actually prove that this lowest eigenvalue exactly equals the central charge at the fixed points. So at any fixed point of this flow, it equals the central charge. So this seems better because you're getting some meaning, some world sheet meaning for this Perelman entropy. So it also seems analogous to the C theorem. Now you can do something more with this entropy.
Sorry.
Yeah.
How different is this function from the C function?
Actually, it's not the same as the C function. The C function is really complicated even on compact target spaces because it's defined by means of a convolution integral and it requires knowledge of the full flow from t equal to minus infinity to t equal to plus infinity. Whereas this is an entropy just for the first order flow. However, at fixed points, they're both the same. Okay, so what else can you do with this entropy? Well, actually, you can use this to make a statement on the linear stability of a perturbation of a fixed point. Now, how are we going to do that? Basically, what we're trying to do is to describe the relevant or irrelevant perturbations of the CFT in target space language. So the idea is the following. At some time t equal to 0, okay, you perturb a fixed point. Okay, suppose you have some fixed point g0, h0. Perturb it with respect to a parameter s. This parameter need not have anything to do with the t. It's just some perturbation parameter. You perturb the initial condition for this flow. Okay, so s is equal to 0 corresponds to a fixed point. Now, whatever entropy I have, I call that entropy lambda. At a fixed point, lambda is a constant. And d lambda by ds, the variation of lambda with respect to s, at s is equal to 0, is 0. Now, compute the second derivative of lambda with respect to s. And evaluate that at a fixed point. Now, what you will have is because this let this axis denote lambda and let this axis denote the flow parameter. So the fixed point sits here. That's the black line. That's lambda equal to constant for all t. Okay? Now if the second derivative of lambda with respect to s is positive, then the perturbation of the fixed point is sitting on top there. Its lambda value is more than the lambda value of the fixed point. Now as you're going to flow, it's just going to increase. So that particular perturbation is going to move away from the fixed point. And if lambda double prime is negative, then you're going to have a perturbation which always increases because of lambda as an entropy, but then that lambda is going to approach the value of the fixed point. So the sign of this second derivative of the entropy expresses a classification of relevant or marginal or irrelevant perturbations of CFT, the language of target space geometry. So the sign of this lambda double prime, if it's negative, it defines a notion of linear stability. Now what is interesting is not this, because this is just a reformulation of language, but in the math literature, linear stability plus some further assumptions have been proven to imply dynamical stability, which means that you can say exactly what this perturbation is going to do for all time, t equal to infinity. You can actually show that at t equal to infinity, it approaches the solution. So the interesting thing would be if we can extend this to the case of the B field. We've not done that so far, but we would like to do so. Okay, now you can also do some other kinds of standard differential geometry techniques. You can apply them to the case of RT flows or their fixed points. So I'm going to describe one last thing. So before I do that, well, let's start with this question. If I just took RG flow with a metric and a dilaton, what are all the fixed points on compact target space? What are all the fixed points to the flow? And the answer is, of course, something which we all know. It's just Ricci flat metrics at first order and alpha prime. So you could have, for example, Calabi-Yau spaces or flat to right, etc. Now we all know that. But then one could ask the question, well, we only want a fixed point in geometry. We don't want just a we don't want a fixed point of the flow. We really want a fixed of the metric flow. We want a fixed point of the geometry. So why can we not have an exotic solution which is not Ricci flat, but the metric changes only by diffeomorphisms? Why can we not have that? Why do we only take Ricci flat spaces? And such a solution would solve this equation. You can work out what happens under a diffeomorphism. It would solve that equation, where the vector field Vi generates your diffeomorphisms. A vector field Vi could just be the gradient of the dilaton. Why can we not have such solutions on compact target spaces? Now there's a result due to a mathematician, Bourguignon, who showed that it's not possible. There are no solutions other than Rij equal to 0. Why is that? It's a very cute argument. Well, what you do is that you start with this general equation whose solutions you want to know. And you can just play around, you can do double derivatives and so on, and you will get that equation. Now this equation is nice because you can apply a minimum principle. What you do is you have this equation, it is obeyed at every point in the target space, look at it at a special point. That special point is the point t in the target space where the Ricci scalar takes its minimum value. Okay, you're guaranteed to have such a point on a compact target space. Because on a compact target space, what can a function do? It can either have a minimum and a maximum, or it can be constant. If it's constant, you can take p to be any point in the target space. If it has a minimum or a maximum, then you take the minimum and look at this equation at the minimum. Now, at the minimum, you know that Laplacian of r at that minimum should be greater than or equal to 0, and the first derivative of r should be equal to 0. So what you're having is, for that particular equation, okay, at the minimum, the left-hand side is greater than or equal to 0, the right-hand side is less than or equal to 0, only ways that both are equal to 0. So at the minimum, you have that rij is equal to 0 and r is equal to 0. Now, since r is equal to 0 at its minimum, everywhere else r must be greater than or equal to 0. So we already found something. We found that everywhere on M, r must be greater than or equal to 0. Now, the same fixed point equation, I will just trace and I get that, and I integrate that. And because we are on a compact space, the integral of the total derivative is 0. So what I get is that the integral of r over M is 0, and r is greater than or equal to 0. That implies r is equal to 0. And plugging it back into an equation which I had in the previous slide gives us Ricci flat space. So even though you could have these exotic solutions, you don't have them. The only possible solutions are Ricci flat space. Now, this result can actually be generalized when you have other fields. You can actually add a bulk tachyon, and you can ask, can you have exotic non-Ricci flat fixed points on compact target spaces? And the answer is really just applying a minimum principle like before. But now, of course, when you have a tachyon, you have these two fixed point equations. And what I'm going to do here is I'm not going to assume any form for the tachyon potential. It's just V of t. It's not linear because tachyon potentials are not linear. Apart from that, I'm not assuming anything. The derivative of the tachyon potential actually appears in one of these equations. Okay. Without assuming any form for this tachyon potential and just applying the minimum principle arguments, you get a result. The result says that the existence of solutions on compact target spaces other than Ricci flat to these two equations is linked to the sign of V double prime of t. In fact, it's linked in a complicated way to how V double prime of t behaves at one point on M. But even if you take a simple form for V of t, which is just the leading order term in the tachyon potential, then from this argument, you can actually see that non-Ricci flat solutions are possible. So this minimum principle argument applied to this case, where you don't assume anything for the tachyon potential, still gives you something non-trivial. Of course, whether there are such solutions is not known, but this shows you that such solutions are possible. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is just finish by talking about some open questions. So these are some results which one obtained by using differential geometry techniques, and these were obtained in a target space picture rather than the worksheet language of CFTs and the perturbations. Now the question is it possible to exploit some of the recent progress in Ricci flow and adapt it, for example, to other string RG flows? I mean, you could include other fields. You're looking at this target space picture, switch on the B field or switch on some other field, and ask exactly what happens to the geometry by staying in the target space. Can you do that? That's one question. So we've done something here, but one could really do more. The other question which could be explored is that are there exact solutions to RG flows that describe all possible orbifold flows which are surmised in flow string tachyon condensation? So there are many such complicated orbifold flows which people think exist. So can you find exact solutions to RG flows which actually mirror that? So the question which really interests me most is, Now we know a lot about singularity behavior in Ricci flow. In particular, we have this whole machinery of what to do when singularities start developing. How do you do surgery and smoothen out the singularity? And so this whole program of Ricci flow with surgery has been developed. The question is, does it have any applications in string theory? So when I was just writing up these slides a couple of days back, I saw this preprint of Hedrick and Weissman, where what they do is they look at perturbations of Euclidean Schwarzschild black hole and see how they behave under Ricci flow. The motivation is basically that Ricci flow in some sense is going to describe string dynamics. So they study these perturbations of the Euclidean Schwarzschild black hole. They find that it's unstable, it starts shrinking at some point. They believe that it might be connected to the thermodynamic instability of the black holes. And what they do is that when it starts shrinking, they actually use Perelman's surgery. And there's no motivation, there's no physical justification which is provided. They just use it because it exists in math literature. It would be really interesting if there was a physical justification for all this. Maybe higher order stringy corrections or winding tachyons or something else. Because if such a physical justification or a physical mechanism for surgery came out, then there'll be lots of questions which are open for working on. I mean, you could use all the understanding on singularity behavior of Ricci flow, and you could generalize it to the case of other fields as well. So that's the hope, and that's what I hope will happen. Thanks.
I have one question. I don't know if I have understood already.
Right.
At some point, you said that the entropy defined at the lowest eigenvalue of
Schrodinger
expression, I understood it was equal to the central charge at fixed point.
I'm sorry?
It is equal
to the central charge.
When entropy increases, what does it mean? That the geometry moves, the geometry that have more central charge, or not?
So the entropy increases, so the entropy, so you have to perturb the system for it to flow first. So if you start perturbing the system, then if it's a perturbation which is irrelevant, then it's going to come back to the same thing, and if it's relevant, then it's going to move away.
And then the central charge will increase in the next.
Yeah, it's a problem. So there's a problem when you talk about an entropy on compact target spaces and you say that you're moving from a higher central charge to a lower central charge, right? So I think that the solution is that maybe you don't have such flows. Maybe only on non-compact target spaces you have such flows, because then you have boundary terms.
Okay.